ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। हरे कृष्ण। सो दिस इवनिंग वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 5, चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड कर्म योगा एक्शन इन कृष्ण कॉन्शियसनेस। टुडे वी विल बी रीडिंग टेक्स्ट 17। तद्बुद्धयः तद्बुद्धयस्तदात्मानस् तन्निष्ठास्तत्परायणाः गच्छन्त्य पुनरावृत्तिम् ज्ञाननिर्धूतकल्मषाः। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील अभय चरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। Translation: when one's intelligence, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. Purport: the Supreme Transcendental Truth is Lord Krishna. The whole Bhagavad Gita centers around the declaration that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the version of all Vedic literatures. Paratattva means the Supreme Reality, who is understood by the knowers of the Supreme as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. Bhagavan or the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the last word in the Absolute. There is nothing more than that. The Lord says, Mattah parataram nanyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. Impersonal Brahman is also supported by Krishna. Brahmano hi pratishtha aham. Therefore, in all ways, Krishna is the Supreme Reality. One whose mind, intelligence, faith and refuge are always in Krishna, or in other words, one who is fully in Krishna consciousness, is undoubtedly washed clean of all misgivings and is in perfect knowledge in everything concerning transcendence. A Krishna conscious person can thoroughly understand that there is duality, simultaneous identity and individuality in Krishna. And equipped with such transcendental knowledge, one can make steady progress on the path of liberation. Hare Krishna. So we have been going through this 5th chapter, and yesterday His Grace Radhika Vallabh Prabhu gave a very nice class, and basically just to slightly recap what we could understand briefly, that a living entity, rather a devotee, he understands that he is not the doer. This particular idea that I am not the doer is very firmly fixed in the consciousness of the devotee. So there are two aspects. I am not the doer in the sense that, he very nicely explained by giving example of a person. Suppose he commits a crime, maybe kills some other person, that doesn't mean that he is not implicated. I am not the doer, so why are you arresting me? It's not in that sense. You are not the doer in the sense that the results do not accrue out of your activity. Whatever results are coming are not by your activity. Whatever activity is performed by the living entity, the results are being provided by the Supreme Lord through the agency of the material nature. In that sense, you are not the doer. But still, the initiator of the activity, the thought, is the individual living entity. So in that sense, the individual living entity is responsible for his activities, so he cannot escape from the responsibility, but he has to understand that he is not the doer. Also, we understood that our body, which we are each embodied living entity, the soul, is occupying the body, is given to each soul according to its own desires and actions. Like in some parts of the world, people are very proud that we will never go hungry because it said that people in some parts of the world, they eat anything that moves. So anything that moves includes so many abominable things. So if a person in the human form of life is indulging in such activities, then what can he expect but an animal body which will further assist him, or rather his desires to eat so many abominable things will be fulfilled in such a body. So in this material world, we are in, you know, different modes. Someone is in mode of goodness, in mode of passion, mode of ignorance. Sometimes we are in mixed modes. During the course of one day, at some point of time, we may feel very relaxed, very content with ourselves, maybe in a mode of goodness mood. And after some time, some events may occur which may disturb us, and we are immediately transferred into mode of passion mode. So even our thought processes are determined by the three modes. And how can we escape? This Prabhupada has given us very nicely in the purport to the previous verse. Prabhupada says in the purport to verse 16, even though a person may be in full knowledge that he is not this body, but he is transcendental to the body, that means the person has full knowledge that he is not the body, he is a spirit soul, still he may not be able to discriminate between the soul and the super soul. So sometimes all the information, all the knowledge that we get, it may not be very palatable. So therefore, even if our thought processes, our every moment is being controlled or is being regulated, or we are being pulled here and there by the three modes of material nature, how can we escape? Is there any way to escape? So Prabhupada says very confidently, by following the scriptures, Prabhupada says, however, he can know everything well if he cares to take the shelter of the perfect bona fide Krishna conscious spiritual master. And by taking shelter of the spiritual master and taking instructions from such a spiritual master and trying to study the scriptures from such a spiritual master, one can steadily progress to try to overcome the effects of the three modes of material nature by getting the knowledge from the scriptures through the medium of a bona fide spiritual master. So this brings us to today's verse 17, where Krishna says, when one's intelligence, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So this is one of the important verses in this particular chapter. So how can we attain this particular stage? How can one attain the stage of understanding the truth, this particular truth or knowledge that we have been reading in the previous verses, that the soul is the initiator of action, super soul is the sanctioner, and material nature is the agency through which it is fulfilled? So how can one understand this particular truth? So only when one is tatparayana, Here Krishna says, these truths can be understood only by one who is Tatparayana, or one who is worshipping the Supreme Lord. So therefore, here Krishna says, Tad Buddhi, Tan Nishthas, Tad Atmanas. So what does he mean? He says, one who engages his intelligence, his mind, his faith, and one's refuge, everything. Such a person who invests all these things in the Supreme, then he understands his knowledge. So, when one gains this knowledge, what is the result of gaining this knowledge? By investing everything, your intelligence, mind, refuge, total refuge you take in the Supreme Lord, then you understand this knowledge of, what is the knowledge? That the soul is the initiator of action, super soul is the sanctioner, and the material nature is the agency. So by understanding this knowledge, what is the result of understanding this knowledge? So there are two substantial fruits of understanding this knowledge. One is detachment and another is surrender. These two fruits come as a concomitant result of knowing these three truths. So somebody knows this, has this knowledge that the soul is the initiator of action, the super soul is a sanctioner of the actions through the agency of the material nature, then automatically these two things, these two results are observed. So let us, today's discussion will focus on how these two things, what are these two things, detachment and surrender, and we will try to understand these topics deeply. So when we discuss about detachment, there are various facets or various levels of understanding this concept of detachment. On one level, we can understand, in the initial stages, detachment is to understand that I am not this body. And by understanding I am not this body, the particular living entity does not endeavor to fulfill the needs of the body or the demands of the body. One begins to understand that I am not this body. Life, like if you can, I mean, we can see all around us. As long as a person is only thinking about bodily, is on the bodily platform, he's just thinking about bodily concerns, bodily comforts, then there are so many demands and so many ways of fulfilling those demands. Like, I was just thinking about this point. I was traveling on the roads here in Bombay going out. So there are so many billboards. And one billboard struck my eye. And it was advertising a hair oil, a particular brand of hair oil with guaranteed stoppage of hair loss within 45 days. And I was wondering, that same brand of hair oil, I mean 15-20 years ago, there was only one oil. I mean, hair oil, coconut hair oil, means that was the only one brand, and even they had only one type of it. But now in the market, that one company has got at least 5 to 8 different varieties of their own brand. You know, scented, non-scented, for hair loss, for some other stuff, sticky, non-sticky, so many different varieties of that one particular brand only. So we can imagine. So this is all, as long as the person is concerned, is on the bodily platform of life, he is thinking that I need this, like this, I need like that. Even somebody who is, I mean, from very objective point of view, is very ugly externally, but if you try to see what is that person's own viewpoint about himself, they will be always trying to, you know, improve their appearance. Even another thing which came to my mind was, around 10-15 years ago, there was only, I think in the market, there was only one fairness cream, and it catered only to the ladies. But since a few years ago, I have seen There are fairness creams even for men who want to look more fair. I thought fairness creams were only for ladies. They are called as the fair sex. But it's now even men want to be the fair sex. They want fairness creams. And there are people who are providing. So, always people are concerned about external appearances. So we see Rupa Goswami talks in the first verse of Nectar of Instruction. He talks about the various urges of the body. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jivha vegam, udara upastha vegam. Now all these vega or urges are present in the body so long as a person is considering himself as the body. As long as a person thinks, to the degree that a person thinks that he is the body, he has an urge to speak. And we see all over the place, there is constant speaking going on, constant, either in the form of actually people speaking to each other or big headlines shouting out from the front of newspapers or the covers of magazines. So much speaking about so many gossip columns, page 3 of entertainment newspapers. So much speech going on, non-stop. So this urge to speak is there, and as much as a person is on the bodily platform, this urge is more. And talking about what? Somebody is talking about latest happenings in IPL, cricket league, and what will happen in the World Cup of IPL, and what is happening in other places, whether Air France flight actually crashed or it was made to crash. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Shri Gopal ji ki jai, Shri Nitai Gaur Chandra ki jai. Or why are Indians being harassed in Australia? This is topic of discussion. Or some other topic of discussion is, there was somebody killed in Austria, Vienna, in Austria. And as a result of that, there was so much of destruction to the tune of, somebody was telling, 10,000 crores worth of property was destroyed in Punjab because somebody got killed in Austria. So many things are being discussed. And you see, there are so much channels where so many things happening. I mean, television is a totally whole thing. So, vacho vegam. And then, people want so many comforts for themselves, for their bodily requirements. And when they are not fulfilled, then krodha arises. And because this is a world of competition, everyone wants something. And for everything which is available, there is not that, you know, it's not a one-to-one correspondence. Something is available and there is only one person who is made for that. There are at least 10 people who think that this is for me. And because of that competition, everyone is thinking that this is for me. And that competition gives rise to anger. And your mind is wandering all over the place because of constant bombardment from the senses and the sense objects. Senses are being bombarded by the sense objects, and the mind is completely wandering all over the place, manasa vegam. And then the person thinks, I am hungry, maybe if I eat this, then my hunger will be satisfied. And then somebody eats this, or you eat this, or you eat this, or you drink that, you drink this particular soft drink, then your thirst will be satisfied. So, jivha vegam, and udara upastha vegam, stomach is asking. And because of uncontrolled jivha and udara, naturally one's eagerness for sex life also increases. So the degree to which we identify with the body, these six urges pull us in different directions. So in the 11th canto, a very nice graphic example is given by the Avadhut Brahman. He says, first of all, the tongue is clamoring for something to eat, something very palatable to eat. And when you feed the tongue, you feed it more and more and more. And then what happens? After you feed it for quite some time, and obviously it feels thirsty. It needs something to drink, so it will ask for something to drink. Then your this food that you have eaten, that gets digested in the body, and you get a lot of strength and vigor. And as a result of the strength which is generated, you need to work it off somewhere. A lot of passion is generated, and then the body, if it's not properly directed, it ends up engaging in a lot of sinful activities. And again you feel hungry, and then your ears are running in one direction for some sort of fulfillment, eyes are running in another direction, and different senses of the body run in different directions, and gradually engage the person in various activities, material activities. So therefore, the first stage in detachment is that a person understands that I am not this body. I am not concerned with the satisfaction or satisfying the bodily demands. But one should gratify one's body only to the extent that it is necessary to keep the body and soul together. This is the standard that is to satisfy the body. Another extreme we can look at this aspect, that a person who is not properly directed, not properly guided, he can go to such an extreme to gratify the senses. Opposite to this, we have another extreme of Shukadev Goswami. He says in the second canto, there is a nice verse in the second canto, Shukadev Goswami says, Satyam Shitau Kim Kashipo Prayasair. So he says, Satyam Kshitav. Kshitav means the flat region of the earth. So if there is a flat region of the earth, Kim Kashipo Prayasair. So we know this word Kashipu from Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu, Hiranya means gold and Kashipu means soft bed. So Shukadeva Goswami says, Satyam Kshitav Kim Kashipo Prayasair. So if there is Kshitav, flat earth, then what is the need of Kshipu? Kashipu, sorry. What is the need of a Kashipu? What do you need? Why do you need a soft bed? Bahav Swasiddhe Hi Upabarhanai Kim. So Bahav Swasiddhe, you have your arms. When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a? You are going ahead. What is the necessity of a pillow? Okay. So Bahav Swasiddhe Hi Upabarhanai Kim Sat Anjalau Kim Purudhana Patriya. So if you have your Anjalu, Anjali, you have your arms, your palms, you can extend your palms. So you can use these palms to ask for food, eat from your palms, fill your palms with hand with water, drink from your palms. Why you need vessels? Digvalkaladau Satikim Dukulai. So, when there is ample covering or the skins of trees, the barks, what is the necessity of clothing? So, this is the other extreme. The standards, the extremely high standards that Shukadeva Goswami is demonstrating in Srimad Bhagavatam. He is talking about this in the second canto. So, on one extreme, we have people running around all over the place just trying to fulfill their bodily demands, and here we have Shukadeva Goswami saying that if one has a flat earth, then what is the necessity of bed? You have your own arms, why you need a pillow? Just keep, put your head on your arms and sleep. And also we have the examples of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They used to sleep under a different tree every night for fear of getting attached. Rather, they were not. They are a Nitya Siddha devotees. They are not going to get attached. But still, to set as an example, they used to sleep under different trees. So therefore, it's not that, of course, these are high standards which have been demonstrated to us by our acharyas. But that doesn't, I mean, it's not that everyone should try to imitate overnight. But at least the principle is that if some person sleeps on a thin mattress, So he goes to some other other place. He is visiting some other place, and there he is offered, say, a thin cushioned mattress. Not a regular straw mattress, but a cushioned mattress. He will be grateful for what is being given to him. But some other person who is used to sleep on a thick Dunlop mattress, he goes to some other place and he is offered that same thin cushioned mattress. He will not be able to sleep throughout the night. And he will be wondering, what is this? And he will be cursing basically. So therefore, one who learns to live in the midst of adversities, whatever he is awarded or whatever he is given, he will feel grateful for that. So that is the principle to be understood. And we can see, even not this, like not one too ancient, maybe 20, 25, 30 years ago also, wealthy people, even now, if you see in traditional families which are, you know, through the various generations, they have been wealthy. It's not that overnight they have become wealthy. So where there is a traditional sense of being wealthy, we can see that the parents, they do not immediately give unlimited wealth in the hands of their children. They ask them to live a simple life, live their life simply, teach how to live simply, the children, so that the children don't enjoy too many comforts. Otherwise, they will never be grateful when they actually get it. So, one should not be concerned with satisfying one's senses. So, when will this happen? Only when the person understands that I am not this body, which is the first aspect of detachment. Even we see automatically among devotees, whenever somebody gets some prasad, like whenever devotees visit some place, Tirupati or Srinathji, Vrindavan, Mayapur, regularly devotees go there. So they always, at the last part of the yatra, there is always a rush to do one particular activity. To buy prasad. Why? When they go back, they will meet other devotees. So they want to share with those devotees. Those who could not come to the dham, though they want to share the mercy, the opportunity that they got to go to the holy dham and get the mercy of the Lord. So they want to share that mercy with the Lord. So always during yatras, this is one observation, that the last day or the last 2 days of the yatra, people are frantically, devotees are running around trying to get some prasad and some special dust from special places and so many other things, so many other special items for their friends, their loved ones who could not come to the dham. So generally it is not that devotees, I got some Mahaprasad, and even if they come and they distribute, it's not that devotees just keep it in one corner, they go and hide and eat. It's like, it's kept in a very common place, very central place where all the devotees can assemble and they can eat, they can honor the prasad that devotees have brought, and so that no one misses out on the opportunity to honor the prasadam. So, when person advances in spiritual life, he is always concerned about satisfying Krishna's senses and the senses of other devotees. They do not want for themselves. So, from this aspect, the first aspect, facet of understanding what is detachment is the person understands that I am not this body. So now, another aspect we can see is that such a person also appreciates that he has no control over material phenomenon, what is happening. When one understands that I have no control over the material phenomenon, then we can say that this is also detachment from one perspective. So, instead of discussing, so there are somebody who is not understood, that is not he has no control over the material phenomenon, we can say he is not detached. So let us look at the person who is not detached. How does such a person think? And then, or rather, let us look at the activities or thought processes of a person who is attached. And from that we can understand how this detachment comes about, by understanding that I am not in control of all material phenomena. So in 16th chapter, Lord Krishna discusses this particular thought processes of a person who is attached, or a person who is attached, how does he behave, how does he think. So what does he say? Idam adya maya labdham. So he says, today I have so much wealth. Idam adya maya labdham imam prapse manoratham. And this particular wealth that I have today, by investing it in so many schemes, I'll invest here in shares, in mutual funds, in so many other activities, I'll give out on loan, and by engaging in so many schemes, I will get so much more in future. Imam prapse manoratham. Idam astidam apime bhavishyati punardhanam. So much is mine now, it will increase in the future more and more. Then he has this mentality of comparison. Asau maya hatashatrur hanishye chaparanapi. He is my enemy and I have killed him. And my other enemies will also be killed. And now the classic statements which explains how does such a person who is attached, how does he think? Ishwaroham aham bhogi siddhoham bhalavan api. So what does he say? Ishwaroham, I am the Lord of everything and I am the enjoyer. Siddhoham, I am perfect, powerful and Bhalavan, Sukhi, I am most happy. Adyo Bhijanavan Asmi. So he says, I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. And most importantly, Konyo Asti Sadrusho Maya. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. Konyo asti sadrusho maya, like me. So this is a thought process, or the way a person who is attached to this material world, attached to this bodily concept of life, who is completely attached to engaging in activities which will gratify the demands of his senses. These are the thought processes. So from this we can understand that when a person gets detached, another aspect of detachment which is revealed here is that he understands that I have no control. Like here this person who is under the impression, he is thinking, this attached person, he has this mentality that Ishwaroham aham bhogi. I am the Lord and Master, I am the controller. Ishwara. So a person who is detached, he has this, he appreciates that he has no control over material phenomena. He is just the initiator of the activities, as I mentioned in the beginning of the class. So somebody who understands that the soul is just the initiator of activities, super soul is the sanctioner of the activities through the agency of the material nature. When someone understands this, then two things result. One is detachment arises in that person, and surrender. So two aspects of detachment. One is I am not this body, and second is I do not have control over all material phenomena. Like for example, we can see this example very clearly. How in the current day and world people are thinking that we can control, we are the controllers. A very classic example was told by His Grace Badrinarayan Prabhu. Once in Mayapur, he was giving Bhagavatam class and he gave this example. And it struck me very much. So one time the US economy was in recession and it was going down and people didn't have any money, so they were not able to purchase anything. They were not purchasing anything, so economy was slowing down. So many companies were producing so many goods, but nobody had money to buy. And everything was becoming completely, you know, the economy was going into a bad shape. So the government thought, the people don't have purchasing power, they don't have money to buy. So what can we do to jumpstart the economy? So they thought, maybe we can do one thing. Maybe we can reduce the taxes a little. You know, we reduce the taxes by a small amount, which will not be such a big burden for our economy. But at the same time, what will happen when we reduce the taxes? People will have some cash in hand, some money in hand, and they will spend it, you know, buying so many things to fulfill the demands of their senses. And when they spend it, the goods will be bought from the market, and that money will circulate in the economy, and then the economy will jump back. So they thought, we have got a very nice idea. So we can control everything, all these material phenomena. And they did it. They reduced, they cancelled some taxes, and people got money in hand. But there was only one problem. On the east coast of America, which is generally the colder side, some demigod somewhere sitting, controlling the winter, he just tapped the thermostat a little bit and the mercury fell and fell and fell, and it was the worst winter in the 25 years. That particular year, the winter became worse in the last 25 years. And what happened accidentally? People had to spend more on heating their homes, fuel for heating. And on the west coast, which is usually the warmer side of America, some other demigod, he tapped the thermostat up. And what happened? Because of uncommon heat waves, people had to switch on all their air conditioners. And as a result, their electricity bills went right through the roofs. So whatever money they saved by reducing the taxes, went into paying the bill for heating fuel or for electricity for running the air conditioners. And there was no purchasing in the markets. And the whole result was the plan of the government, US government, failed miserably. So we can see that on such a big scale, when a government also plans, it's not that individual level only, like the saying goes, man proposes and God disposes. Not only on individual level, on big scale also this thing applies true. Like one time, few of our devotees, they were going to one preaching program by car, and the driver usually would drive fast, but what happened was, at that time, the preacher who was going in that car, he knew that the driver is a fast driver. He likes to drive fast. So when he sat, he said, drive slow. Drive slow. Please drive slow. Don't drive fast. So he said, okay. And then he started the car. And as soon as the first turn came in the road, so he turned the steering wheel. And the steering wheel turned this way, but the car continued going straight. So what had happened was, the steering wheel, the steering mechanism was broken. So therefore, this is how material phenomenon works in this world. Sometimes when you turn right, it will turn right. Sometimes you turn left, it will turn left. But sometimes, it will also happen that you will turn right and the vehicle will go in its own direction. Because you have no control over the material phenomena. It is beyond our control. So, just like if some fool, he thinks that Ishwaroham, aham bhogi, he becomes more frustrated when such activities take place. Usually he is saying, okay, I am turning the steering wheel right, vehicle is going right. Usually it happens that way. But sometimes, and that fuels his thought that Ishwaroham, aham bhogi, if it increases. And sometimes when it happens that he is turning right and doesn't turn right, the vehicle, so it will keep going straight and his frustration increases more and more. So therefore, what happens is, you should understand that I should not be attached to it. I should not be attached to anything that is offered by material nature. Because generally whatever is offered like this is just going to increase our thought that I am the Lord and Master. Like what we get from material nature, our skills, our sometimes we get certain positions, people get some position in life. Like we have this example, classic example of in Mahabharata, when Arjuna had just killed, he had the Gandiva bow and he had just killed Karna. So within the heart, Arjuna was feeling some pride that I have finally killed Karna. So Krishna said, what you are feeling is just like beating a dead snake. Sometimes in villages, when a snake suddenly comes out, so all the people, they keep running here and there. They run to every corner to, you know, hide away from the snake. So somebody, some person who is expert in how to catch snakes or how to kill snakes, they come and then they kill the snake. And when they kill the snake and they are dragging the snake away, then all the small kids and everybody, you know, small kids, they come and they take a stick and they beat the snake. See, I also beat the snake. I can also beat the snake. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that this thought, this small pride which is arising in your heart is like beating a dead snake. Why? Because this power that Arjuna had, Krishna says that you actually, I have already killed, he says in Bhagavad Gita, I have already killed all these kings and all these warriors you see on this battlefield of Kurukshetra, they are already dead. You are just the nimitta. I am just using you as an instrument to be the cause of their death. But their death is already done. I already decided. You are just the nimitta. And we see again in the Srimad Bhagavatam, later on, when Krishna has left this world, that same Arjuna with the same Gandiva bow, he could not protect the queens of Dwaraka against a few infidel cowherd men. He had no power to fight them. So this is what the Lord is showing us through these pastimes, that we do not have control over this material phenomenon. And the third aspect of detachment is a devotee gives up his interest for materialistic activities and rather he engages himself in spiritual activities. Rather, he engages himself so much completely, so much, he makes himself so much busy in Krishna conscious activities that Maya cannot touch him. So, for devotees, detachment is something, it may come very spontaneously because a devotee's endeavor is to keep his schedule so much packed, completely packed. That's why Prabhupada gave us this whole schedule of morning program, morning Mangalarti, Narsing Arti, Tulsi Arti, Japa, Guru Puja, Darshanarti, Guru Puja, Bhagavatam class, and then you have your own services throughout the day, then evening again, Sandhya Arti, Narsing Arti, Bhagavad Gita class. This whole day is completely packed throughout. First morning session, you know, one concentrated dose, evening session, concentrated dose. And you have in between your various services and other activities which you engage throughout the day. So, this detachment comes as a, you know, automatic or a concomitant corollary. He does not need to engage or do some separate endeavor to achieve detachment. Like we see in the case of Bharat Maharaj. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is this very famous case of Bharat Maharaj, and it says in fifth canto, Yo Dustajan Dara Sutan Suhrud Rajyam Hridis Prasha. So Yo Dustajan. Dustajan means, Tyajan means Tyaj, means to give up. Tyajan or dustyajan, very difficult to give up. Yo dustyajan, what is very difficult to give up? Dara sutan, wife and children, or a very opulent family life. So yo dustyajan, dara sutan and suhrid, friends, rajyam, a big kingdom, hridi sprushaha. And that all those things which are, you know, very much in the core of our heart, which we really like from the core of our heart, such things which are very difficult to give up. Yo dustajan, dara sutan, suhrid, rajyam, hridi sprusha. Like, I have this example from my own life. Many times people go to various places, Kashi and other places, and it is, there is one saying that when one visits Kashi, so while after visiting Kashi, you do the, you go there and do certain ritualistic activities. So after, when you go there and you come back, you are supposed to give up one thing which you like very much, one eatable, they say. So among smartas. So once my grandmother, she had gone on this visit to Kashi, and on when she came back, after coming back, she used to cry a lot for many days. So I was wondering, why is she crying? What happened? Something happened during this trip? So I asked her, what happened? Why are you crying? She said, no, actually there is this custom, this activity, that whenever we go to Kashi, while after coming back from Kashi, we are supposed to give up something which is very dear to us. Hridi sprusha. That which is very close to our heart. So when I was told like this, she told me that somebody, when I was instructed like this, so I thought, I like this fried aloo sabji very much. So I gave that up. But it is so much painful for me. That is why I am crying. Because I had to give this aloo sabji. So we can see, in the case of Bharat Maharaj, yo dyustajan, dara, sutan, suhrud, rajyam, hridi sprusha, everything. So many things which were so difficult to give up, he gave all of that up. How? Jahau yuyaiva malavad. Jahau yuyaiva malavad. He gave it up. Just like someone walks away after passing stool. Someone walks away after passing stool. He just walked away from that place, from his kingdom. Like usually, we see that, you know, when we, it's such a graphic example. When we have to leave the latrine after passing stool, nobody is crying, hey, I have to leave this latrine. Rather, people are crying before passing stool, people are crying because somebody is already there inside, and when he will come out. But after once one is done with the job, they just leave the latrine, walk out, and they, okay, you can go now. I have done. So satisfaction. So Bharat Maharaj, he just gave that place up, gave up his family, gave up his wife, children, his kingdom, so many things which are so close to his heart. He just gave them up as if he just passed stool and just walked away from that place. But why could he do that? Why could he do that? Because Uttama Shloka Lalasa. That is the most important line of this verse. Uttama Shloka Lalasa. Because of, he was so fond of serving. Attachment, lalasa, attachment to serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That was the reason why he could give up this particular all these attachments, so-called things which are difficult to give up. So therefore, we have to understand that When a person who is detached, he gives up his interest for materialistic activities. And by giving up this interest for materialistic activities, not just minus, but positively engaging so much in the activities of serving the Lord with love and devotion, that he becomes completely detached. So the three aspects of detachment that we saw is, first is that the person is on the bodily platform. He gives up, he knows, he understands that I am not this body. And does not unnecessarily endeavor to fulfill the needs or the demands of the body. And second, he understands that not all material phenomena, rather I am not the controller of all material phenomena. And third, he understands, rather he gives up the materialistic activities and engages more and more in the service of the Lord. So these are the three aspects of detachment which arises in a person or the living entity who understands that, who has the knowledge in the which is discussed in the previous verses. And what is that knowledge? That the soul is the initiator of all action, and the super soul is the sanctioner and the, through the agency of material nature. So another aspect which, or another feature which arises in such a person who has this knowledge, is surrender. So surrender is that when one understands that I am not autonomous in my activities, and when one understands this, one begins to repent. Like he understands, begins to understand that since so many lifetimes the super soul has been traveling along with me in so many bodies, in all animal species, on all plant bodies, everywhere. Like there is the Upanishadic analogy where it is compared that the soul and super soul are like two birds on a tree. So the individual soul is trying to eat the fruits on this tree, trying to enjoy the fruits on the tree, while the super soul is just silently looking on, waiting for the soul to turn back to him. So therefore, we have to understand that when the individual person understands that the super soul has been traveling with me, has been trying to guide me through so many lifetimes, and when the soul understands this particular aspect, at that time, naturally a repentance arises in the heart of the individual living entity. So Prabhupada gives this a very nice example. He says that sometimes you see, you know, rich people, especially on Chowpati, when you go in the mornings, rich people, they walk their dogs, you know, and sometimes or many times the dogs are held on leash. So the dog wants to go here and there, you know, wants to try and eat something fallen there, or do so many, run around all over the place. It doesn't want to walk in a straight line. But the master is constantly pulling that dog back, you know, constantly bringing the dog back to the proper path. Similarly, Prabhupada says that in all our various sojourns, in so many different types of bodies, in so many different species, the Lord has been acting as the master, and we, as usual, acting like the dog, trying to run all over the place, you know, trying to be rebellious, trying to say that I won't follow your path, I will go wherever I want. And patiently and surely, the Lord is constantly pulling the leash, you know. So many times people have this experience that whenever we are going to do something, we always, you know, many times some person is trying to do something wrong, they feel that conscience or that guilty feeling. What is that? Basically, super soul is telling from within, what you are trying to do is wrong, don't do this, you will implicate yourself more in the cycle of birth and death. And like this, the Lord is constantly trying to bring us back to him. But after many lifetimes, when the living entity is enlightened with this knowledge, That I am the initiator of my actions, the super soul is the sanctioner, and material nature is performing all the actions. This living entity repents a lot. And this repentance acts as a springboard that from which this particular living entity can dive into the pond of surrender. So therefore, these are the two aspects or two features or two results, natural results of a person or a living entity understanding this knowledge that the soul is the initiator of action, super soul is the sanctioner, and material nature is the sanctioning agency. So if one wants to surrender, the first step is to repent for all one's nonsensical activities. And the devotee, he understands that the Paramatma, the super soul, is total control. So, and then he achieves perfect knowledge, as it is explained in this verse today, that when one's intelligence, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one fully becomes cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So such a person, Krishna says, can proceed straight on the path of liberation. Therefore such a person all his misgivings are cleansed through complete knowledge, what is his consciousness? And how does he behave? What are his activities? Slokas 18 onwards till I think 22, they describe the vision of a self-realized soul. So we'll discuss that from tomorrow onwards. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If anybody has any questions or queries, you can ask. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai.